Okay, so first of all, thanks to Yara, Lulu, and Vienna, and everybody who organized this wonderful program, which I've been able to enjoy for the last couple of weeks, / months. And I just want to tell you an update on this business about enhanced constellations that the SDN collaborators have been looking at for a few years now. And in particular, I want to tell you about the first bit of general structure that we might have found, which is a bit different from other kinds of constellations that people are more used to. So first of all, I want to review, this is work with Zvi Michael, who's here in the audience, and also Mao, who I guess it's packet UCLA. So first I will tell you about these enhanced constellations, what they are, and we'll review how they are different from constellations in other supersymmetric theories that we are more used to. In particular, I will just tell you about this table that Zvi always likes to show all the constellations that have been shown so far, and what is the perspective. I will also tell you a little bit of how these things can sort of be seen at lower loops and tree-level, sort of at the integral level, and why we think that this is not the way to go, or some examples we found that give strong evidence that that one needs more information than just the integral, whatever that might be for an open or MPG. And then I will tell you about this bit of general structure that what we found that requires some knowledge about integration, but in the end is some very generic and simple statement about what are the tools one needs to display these constellations. Okay, so first of all, these enhanced constellations, they are different from other constellations in supersymmetric theories in general. So if we look at Susik H theories, which is n equals 4, the constellations were shown a long time ago just by looking at the power counting. There's some special supergraph formalism, some nice representations of the integrand, some first quantized formulation that makes the power counting manifest diagram by diagram, so that we can just count and see that the theory is fine. So the final feature of these constellations is that the power counting is manifestly finite.
That's for color-ordered amplitudes.
Yeah. On the other hand, these enhanced constellations, how they're defined are precisely constellations which cannot be seen piece by piece in the amplitude. No matter how you organize it, if you want to write an integrand that only has usual poles, you don't introduce any spurious singularities, so far no one has found a way of seeing these constellations term by term. So these enhanced constellations, the power counting is not manifest. So let me give an example.
Include cancellations in QED due to sums over orderings?
So you mean, for instance, I think the simplest example of an enhanced constellation which has nothing to do with gravity is light by light scattering.
Yeah, stuff like that.
And that, again, it's sort of understood that because of gauge invariance, these things...
It's just gauge invariance.
Yeah. But in general, yeah, these would be, by definition, an enhanced constellation, and their gauge invariance just explains everything. But in gravity in particular, we don't know what is the reason for these things to happen. Okay, so let me give an example, because there's some technical definition having to do with maximal counts, etc., but I think it's simpler to just look at an example. So if we look at n equals 4 supergravity at one loop. Okay, one loop amplitudes, we always think, oh, this is completely explained, supersymmetric, blah, blah, blah. Actually, that is not quite true for less or equal than 4 supersymmetries, because there is some available countertensor. Of course, one-loop graviton amplitudes are finite because the counter term is some topological object, it's evanescent. But if we do the calculation in formal polarizations, as David will tell us more about later today, one can find the pieces in the amplitudes that would be the the divergence. It's just that when we plug in any polarizations, four-dimensional polarizations, these things vanish. But this thing is still finite, even with formal polarization. So when you have less than four supersymmetric, supersymmetry doesn't tell you that these amplitudes have to be finite. It just tells you that because the gravity one is evanescent, and all the rest of the one blue amplitudes that are related by supersymmetry to that, they are also finite. So in some sense, this is an enhanced translation, which is explained but unexplained at the same time.
Is there an actual allowed intervals for counter time at one loop?
So this, David might have something to do about, say about this later, but yes, basically there is some, we claimed in a recent paper that there is some n equals 4 completion of some R squared operator, and we can write down there would be matrix elements. It's just that they're evanescent. But that's different from explaining that the coefficient is not divergent, that it's some finite thing.
Is this n equals 4 the pure theory or with matter?
This is pure n equals 4.
So the usual argument is everything is related to the graviton.
Well, indeed,
therefore, it should be related to R squared, which is Gauss-Bonnet, which is...
Yeah, but that's...
What's the loophole in that argument?
No, there is no loophole in that argument. It's just that if I want, I can look at these Gauss-Bonnet formal polarizations, and then it's not zero, it's some formal object. And then the coefficient of...
Aren't you just looking at other states in the multiplet when you take the form, some of the polarizations to point in internal directions?
Well, one can do that, but that's different from saying that the coefficient of this object that you that in another dimension would be non-zero. It's some finite thing. But maybe David will talk more about these terms in this particular object. I just want to illustrate what this enhanced constellation means here. Basically, how you construct these amplitudes is using this BCJ construction double copy, which I won't review because people have heard about it many times. But this amplitude in gravity, it takes a very easy form. Using this double copy, we have some overall factor, which is the free amplitude for n equals 4, super young meals. And then we just have a sum over boxes with young meal numerators. Now, these boxes contain terms. The numerator for these things contain terms of this form. So in four dimensions, this is some logarithmic divergence. And there is no way by doing some transformation of the interference, some change of variables, relabeling, whatever you want, there is no way one can get rid of this term without introducing some non-locality.
But you insist on writing boxes, so if you plug in polarizations and you are willing to write triangles and bubbles, does it?
Well, it doesn't change. If you, what do you mean writing triangles and bubbles?
Well, I just do the integral decomposition now, so I don't write just boxes, but I also write triangles and bubbles and want to see because the bubbles can.
But this thing. We're talking about the interim for now.
Yeah, but we want polarizations first, so I agree that if you are strict with polarization vectors, you cannot do much. But if you block polarizations, I can imagine that you can reshuffle it into triangles and boxes.
I don't think that is actually
the same as you cannot, or?
No, I don't know. That uses the fact that it's an integral in front. The original statement was that you don't see cancellations if you look only at the integral.
And this is what I want to talk about. That actually, you need to do some reduction in order to see the integral. But in particular here, if you look at these pieces, which are the ones that give the divergence, and then you just use Lorentz invariance in the usual form that when we find something like this in an integral, we just substitute it by this sort of thing, then you can see the cancellation because you get a d minus 4 multiplying the whole thing, so that there is no divergence. But this uses some knowledge about the integration. So that cancellation is a statement about the integral. There is nothing that I can do with the integral.
It's a integral decomposition, but it's not enough.
Yeah.
You can still do it. You can write boxes and triangles and push.
But this thing, you cannot reduce it without doing any integration. Like the integral decomposition would be substituting terms of this form, L dot K, by some difference of propagators. and then release into bubbles. But this thing, because you have the polarizations there.
Yeah, I'm saying I would plug like MHV, for example, then I have this Fourier.
Yeah, but then these terms also won't be a difference of propagators, no matter what you plug in. There is some mu terms, it's also, again, it's not a difference of propagators. Anyway, it's just a... That is the definition. Maybe we can discuss about this later. I will just very quickly tell you about what is the status of the calculations that have been done about during the last few years. So this is a number of loops. So of course, for pure gravity with some axiom dilaton, we know that the one loop is finite because of this evanescent property. So this is fine, but there is a divergence of two loops. It's still a bit tricky, as Lee and Lutz and others have explained lately. Then for any post-force of gravity, the theory is finite up to three loops, but at four loops, there is a divergence. So this is expected to have something to do with some anomaly in duality symmetry of this theory, which we might have something to tell about this in the future. Then n equals 5, it's finite up to four loops, and the same thing with 8. Now they have the integram, 5 loops, there is some progress integrating it. But the important thing here is that these two zeros are still unexplained. So there is no known symmetry explanation for the fact that this theory is finite at 3 loops, and this theory is finite at 4 loops. So far, no one has come up with an explanation. So that's why when people think something must be going on, this is just a statement about the calculations. The important question is there some symmetry? Is there something that we miss in gravity that implies these zeros? And how would one go about proving finiteness if this thing happens for any of these series? Of course, if we want to prove finiteness, then we should look at sort of integram statements. But also, let's look at tree level, because basically the tree level amplitude has the same structure as the integral of the loop level amplitude. And there, the statement about an enhanced behavior of gravity is what people usually call a good large Z behavior of the amplitudes, and there's some complex deformation of the external momenta. So we do some viscous values here, where we take some momenta and we deform them. So in general, if at tree level, if one looks at the diagrams, one can look at the things that would be worse behaved. So we have this momentum coming in here, some other coming out here. This depends on this variable z. If we do the power counting of this diagram, we have that each propagator would give two inverse powers of loop momentum, of momentum. And each vertex, because this is gravity, would also give two powers. In principle, we would expect this to go like z squared, something like that. But when we look at the whole amplitude to some other graphs, we see that under some special shifts, this thing is better behaved than we thought. So this thing still has some poles at infinity. There are some directions that we can scale where the amplitude will blow up. There is some special directions that where the amplitude just dies off, and that allows the use of recursion for gravity, etc., etc. Now, one might think, can we import this understanding to the loop amplitudes to explain some of these cancellations? And this was done at one loop a while ago already. And basically the idea is that because at one loop we have this integral decomposition, and here I'm not talking about doing this sort of reduction. I'm just talking about everything that is a dot product of some external momenta with some loop momenta, which is reduced, and we have the amplitude written as some coefficients and boxes. Plus some triangles, some bubbles, etc. possibly with some numerators carrying loop momentum. So this what is V, this J, it unfolded. Is to look at some special cuts of these amplitudes. So for instance, they looked at these sort of cuts. And then, because we have three on-shell conditions, this loop momentum now is a function of some parameter, some domain parameter. And by looking at the behavior of this cut, when we scale this parameter, this is sort of an avatar of what is the how many powers of loop momentum we will have when we do this sort of decomposition. So basically, the improved Lorentz behavior of the trees allowed them to show that certain theories do not have bubbles, do not have triangles, and that there is some cancellations. In particular, one would expect that in large loop momentum, this thing goes proportional, like as L to the some power of the number of particles. And what they found is that this is not true, and in fact, this thing always scales with a fixed power, no matter how many legs go past.
But if we consider, say, imaginary part of 4 over 10 amplitude, right? Optical ceiling, okay? Cross section is breaking the entirety at a certain point anyway, right? So you cannot improve this, right?
This is an integrand state.
No, I understand that it is a loop, right? But so it means that you can have some number of subsections for dispersion relation. So the very fact that imaginary part grows, by itself doesn't tell you that the answer could not be calculated, right? But the breaking of unitarity is unavoidable, right?
Yeah. But this is not what we are trying to do here. We are just trying to use these cuts to see how many powers of loop momentum will I have.
No, I understand the here. Yeah. Right. But I mean, some kind of signal of large energy behavior is there, is still there.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't say anything about that. It's literally a technical trick to see how this thing will work and to import this knowledge from our loop. Okay, so we would like to do this at higher loops, but there are several obstructions.
So in this example, in the n equals 4 sugra, that factor on the right looks a lot like the light by light scattering.
Yeah.
So there's probably gauge invariance in one of the gauge copies that you could blame for the cancellation, right?
In fact, this case, if you look at the analysis, the n equals 4 case, the case with 4 external particles, is the one that these sort of arguments cannot explain. So there must be some other kind of explanation, which might be that. But
why isn't it just that, sort of? Is it the gauge invariance on this copy forbids a light by light?
But once you are talking about graviton scattering due to light by light or...
Well, I'm saying he's doing graviton scattering.
Yeah.
But he's factorized it into two pieces. Mm-hmm. And one piece looks very similar to light by light because it's fourth order in the loop momenta and it is totally symmetrized. So it's abelianized. And so, I don't know, I'm just suggesting.
Yeah.
I mean, some of this was done by Svi in the six-dimensional F cubed case, I think, a similar analysis. So.
No, but for the light by light, there is no breaking of unitarity besides logarithmic behavior, right? So, I mean, it is still a normalizable theory. I mean, if you are talking about light by light.
I'm just saying there's no divergence in light by light scattering. There's no UV divergence at one loop.
Oh, no, that's certainly true, but it has very simple explanation, right? Because once you know that it is expressed through field cells, you know this, right?
I'm just saying you should appeal to that simple explanation.
No,
in the context of this double copy.
That might be right for this case, but what people were looking for is some more general picture that can be valid for a number of legs in the
case, then integrands don't factorize, and you don't.
Yes.
This is very special because the n equals 4 one loop doesn't have a numerator factor.
In fact, some of these cancellations, even the two loops, because there is some similar sort of factorization,
right,
are sort of explained from the double copy.
EF cubed one, I think. In,
There's some forbidden color factors that I think Yutin and Z and other people show that they're responsible for the cancellation. But that kind of.
You're going to argue that won't work in general because of numerator factors and the n equals 4 copy.
So here, I mean, because things in general, the n equals 4 numerators will independently implement that kind of being generalized. This is one of the reasons why we were trying to find a different approach and we went back to this argument. So anyway, at higher loops, there are two obstructions to trying to do something like this. First of all, at two loops, we have really non-planar diagonals for the first time. One loop is just some ordering, but here we have truly non-planar diagonals, and there is no definition of integrand. For now, for the non-planar amplitude. So any statement we want to do in general, there is no set of labels or that we can assign to each diagram and then just add up all the diagrams and see how the thing behaves, because each diagram has its own labels and all the representations we have are in terms of diagrams, and there is no notion of the global object that we call the integrand.
Yeah. But I mean, this Alan's argument, for example, like by like, would be a normal argument, of course, but it corresponds that you have, say, some number of external Riemanns, right? And in this particular order in first loop, you still get in a final continuum. But then you cannot continue this forever, right? Because if it's related to particular, I mean, power of Riemanns, right? So how you will justify it for higher loops? For this given loop, I agree.
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I'll answer you after the seminar.
Okay.
All right. And then the other obstruction, this is the main obstruction we have. And then the problem is that also we don't know how to scale. In general, these cuts, they will have many, many variables. And we don't know how to scale, and also there is no such decomposition at two loops. There is no canonical basis. That would allow a similar design. There's different bases that serve different purposes. There's some bases that are diagonal in their cuts that Jar and Rico and Jake have recently introduced, which have some nice properties for arguing about the integrand. There is some bases that identify which pieces integrate to zero through some IBP analysis, and these are good for practical computations. But there is no canonical way of writing the higher loop amplitudes, even diagram by diagram. So this thing is hard to import. But still, one would like to do something like this if we want to do a no-loop analysis, because without the integrand, it seems very hard.
One small point. So here you are writing already boxes, so you are already considering the integration sign directly, because otherwise you have to write pentagons.
Well, you can add the pentagons and the analysis goes through in the same way.
I just for the future. Are you sticking with kind of this logic?
No. You can add the pentagons and they won't change anything because they're finding
they integrate to zero if you want, but if in this logic of the construction amplitude, are you already throwing away these pieces or not?
In principle, no. One would like to have all the pieces. So if you wish, I'm writing this plus things that integrate to zero, which we keep. We can keep these things in the integrand. It's just that if we are interested in these cancellations, we can just forget about this because they just integrate to zero.
Well, for this argument of scaling momentum, it might be important, you don't know.
Yeah, we're keeping it. People there, they look at the cuts. They don't look at for the boxes, they just look at these cuts and they argue about these coefficients. But in general, for the scaling arguments, these things, you need them to match the cuts. Yes. So you need the whole integrand to construct this. And this is a statement about the scaling of the whole integrand, including this. It's just that they use it to say how many powers of loop moment I have here and here, because that's an interesting statement about the UV behavior, because only a tensor here and a tensor here might give you the UV.
Right, I'm not really arguing about one loop. It's just that if you want to use these arguments at two loop, there is no such a nice degradation of the basis to that one, because you have to keep double penta constant penta boxes. You can't throw any away. Right?
Okay, but we will keep everything. But still, there is no analogous statement, because we don't even know. If you give me a basis, I can tell you which integrals are UV divergent, but in general, there is no analogical way. Alright, but let me give you one example why we think that even this sort of thing would fail. So we went to the simplest case where the entire loops there is this enhanced cancellation, which is n equals 4, but actually in 5 dimensions of 2 loops. This is still unexplained. And then the structure is very simple. Now, how do we solve this problem? Well, we look at cuts. If we want to do a particular unitary cut, for instance, at 2 loops, we might look at this sort of cut. This thing fixes the labels of the loop momentum, and then I know how to write all my diagrams, and I can see if there is some cancellation between these diagrams with these particular labels. Now, this can be a problem because, in general, if I cut too much, I'm obstructing the cancellations. So, for instance, this case, n equals 4 at 2 loops, we only have 2 diagrams contributing with some numerator, which are some double boxes and some non-planar double boxes. So if I would look at this sort of cut, with some particular labels, then I'm just looking at how this diagram with these same labels scales when I do this sort of analysis. So if I cut too much, I cannot see any cancellation if it's happening between diagrams. So what one would like to do is to look at, instead of these so-called maximal cuts, to look at what you might want to call minimal cuts, which is the cuts where we cut just as many legs that, as we need to fix all the loop momentum labels. So just we cut just enough to fix the labels.
But that still needs to cut all the momentum. You cannot leave one uncut because that label will be fixed, right?
We need to cut all the momentum. Yeah. There's for instance, for this amplitude, this is the sort of cut one might look at. There are some other cuts which look like some forward in it, but so we all know these things are sort of problematic. So this is the only cut, the minimal cut that fixes all the loop labels of all the loops in the amplitude. And then one might look at this and see if there is some improved behavior. So in general, for general helicities, we did this. We did some numerical analysis. We didn't find any special directions where anything nice happened. But there is one particular helicity configuration that is related to some amplitude with external dilatons in the double copy, where one can see that there is now no extra cancellation happening. And this happens because these two numerators on this cut, the Yangmin numerators, they just go like S times some function of the epsilon dimensional components of this loop momentum. So if I have P and Q here, then I have that this is some four-dimensional part, and then some minus two epsilon dimensional part. And then the super Yangmin numerators, they're just S times, again, this STA3. Which is fully cross-symmetric. So, in particular, when we look at this cut, what one finds is that this cut in equals 4 super it's just this function of the epsilon dimensional components. Times the corresponding cut in n plus h square gravity. Then two loops n equals h square gravity, the part timing is manifest. There is no extra cancellation going on. There is nothing special when you add all the diagrams. The leading power doesn't go down. Nothing happens when you add all the diagrams. So we see this as evidence that one needs to know something else about Okay.
Do you happen to know what happens if you cut only two, not three legs?
Well, the only way to cut two legs and fix all the labels is by looking at this sort of... you want to fix all the loop labels.
If you cut two, it reduces to a three, so really everything is fixed. But okay, fine.
Yeah, but this is the sort of thing that you would write, and it's a forward limit.
I can still use that you have one loop under a boot control and kind of be fine with having one loop on one side. That's what you mean.
How many dimensions are you in now?
Here?
Yeah.
This is looking at the divergent part in four dimensions or the five dimensional example. It's the same. So this what this thing means is different. So what this thing means when we do four dimensions is the minus epsilon dimensional components. If we go to five dimensions, is it just the momentum.
There's no puzzle in four dimensions.
No, yeah, that's right. So in five dimensions, this thing, but let me say something. Even the cancellations that are explained by some symmetry and supersymmetry or whatever, the way they happen, it's mysterious. It's not term by term. It's still, even if it's explained, it's enhanced in the sense that you don't see the power counting manifestly when you write the equation. Okay. So there was some hope that this would work, because there is some evidence that in a different regime of the amplitudes, a similar thing happens. So Enrico and Jara showed that there is some particular IR property of the gravity amplitudes, particular when one looks at some collinear cut of this type, the way the Onshell diagrams for gravity that they studied work is that when this goes to zero, the Onshell diagram just factorizes some factor of in four dimensions times the rest. And then they saw that using summing over different labelings of the integrand, what could make this property manifest also at the integral level. So there is something nice happening at the IR that one can see at the level of the integrand. But for the UV cancellations, we couldn't see anything nice happening just by choosing some labels or something with labels. And because of this argument n equals 8, there is no cancellation, we don't expect that there will be anything happening. So we need to know something about integrals in order to see the cancellations. Okay, so let me just very briefly say that the first approach that one might take is so the minimal knowledge about integration that we can ask is knowing if something introduces zero or not. So one might think that we can take our integrand of the amplitude, which in general will be a sum of some terms, which are good in the UV, plus some terms that are bad in the UV. And then by using some tricks, we organize this as some different set of good terms, and then some other set of bad terms, but with the property that these things integrate to zero. So just using this IBP technology that people have been developing, which is the way one constructs these sort of objects to reorganize the integrand. Keeping all these pieces, we are making an integrand statement. We are not throwing away, we are not using the integrals yet. We are just organizing the integrand in this way and seeing if this can be done. And in fact, for these amplitudes that I was talking about, the two loops, this sort of thing can be done. But it's still very complicated. It's really hard to generate these IBPs. Again, there is no canonical basis, so the expression one gets in the end is some horrible mess. So even though it can be done, it doesn't seem that one can push this to higher loops. So we have to go back to another approach to see if there is any structure, which might still be related to this sort of organization. And we might as well just follow our nose and think about how we do the calculations to show the cancellations. So the cancellations happen at large loop momentum. They are UV cancellations, so usually when we have the integrand, we focus on the diverging piece. There are some technicalities because one is doing the calculation in dimensional regularization. We only look at the logarithmic divergence because all Dimbrag is insensitive of all the power-like divergence, but one can look at different dimensions, and there is some. It's not a precise limit, but at a higher dimension, if some power that divergence cancels, this should be related to the cancellation of logarithmic divergence in our image. So basically, we want to look at large loop momentum. So we take our integrand, we expand. And then this is written as some sum over vacuum diagrams. So for instance, at two loops, we only have one sort of vacuum, which is this thing, which might have different powers of each one of these propagators, which we can denote by some dots. Like for instance, this thing would correspond to something that goes like 1 over, this is p and this is q, like p squared, q squared squared, p plus q squared squared. All right? Usually there are some set of identities that one can use to reduce this to a basis. This is a bit tricky. One needs to use the traditional approach, which Marcus and Signori showed a while ago, is just because these things are identically zero in dimensional regularization. These are scaleless integrals. Basically, when I expand one, might think, oh, you're just writing zero all the time, or zero equals zero, and you're not doing any work. So what one does,
it's a symbolic zero, right? Because it's divergent integral, right?
Yeah, but it's both. These vacuums are both UV and IR divergent, and because Dimbrag regulates both, there's some cancellation of both divergences, and you just get zero. It's a scaleless integral. So the traditional approach is one regulates the IR, introducing some mass or something, and then extracts the actual UV divergence of each of these things. But in general, adding this mass makes things very complicated. If one wants to look at IVPs, the addition of this mass just complicates things. You have extra transcendental pieces that one might get, etc., etc. But it turns out that one can use integration by parts identities to show cancellations. It's just that there are some requirements that these IVPs need to satisfy if one wants to use them to show these cancellations. Basically, you have to justify that you're not writing 0 equals 0 when you use one of these IVPs. So there are two requirements. And for those of you who are not familiar with this IVP language, these IVPs are the statement that in dimensional regularization, some integral of this type is just zero. Almost by definition, but the idea is that one goes to a dimension high enough where the boundary term is just dies off. So this thing is zero, so in dimensional reg, we just continue it back. And this, when one expands this derivative, just gives you a relation between a set of integrals that one can use to go to a basis. But precisely because of this, these boundary terms and things that happen when you expand, not all of these IVPs can be used to talk about divergences. So an example of this is I have some particular IVP that tells me that there is this relation between the triangle and bubble integrals in four dimensions. So there is some relation which tells me that this thing plus this thing equals zero. So we know that this integral is UV divergent. This is for Maslow's theory. This integral is IR divergent. So basically, if we would use this integration by parts identity to get rid of one of these and replace it by the other, we would be trading some UV divergence by some IR divergence, and all the UV and IR are completely mixed, and we don't know what's going on. So one of the requirements.
You really mean to draw a three-mass triangle there?
No. Wait. mean this. So one of the requirements is that there is no dimensional dependence in the coefficients of the relationship between the intervals, because these epsilons are what is messing around the different UB and IR behavior. And the other requirement, which is not,
I mean, you presumably really mean just to order that there's no, it's not order epsilon. There can be some series expansion in epsilon, but the leading coefficient has to be some constant to that, or some function.
No, I'm literally saying I don't want any this here in all the coefficients of the relations between the intervals. Because if these intervals are divergent, either IR and UV, then I'm just hiding.
Sure, that's if it's, but in general, there's going to be some rational function of epsilon that has some finite limit as epsilon goes to zero. In the IBP relations, that's the general structure you get.
Yes, but that's
presumably you accept.
That we don't use. I mean, we are just using IBPs that where D doesn't appear anywhere.
Doesn't appear, or you are sending D to 4 in the end, like what?
Well, you can send D to 4 because there is no D anywhere in the formula.
Yeah, but even in 4 dimensions, the example of this type, where you see you have integration over, say, 4 momenta, right? And it could be that boundary term is still divergent. And if it's there, you know, you should be careful.
Yeah, so there are two requirements. One of them is this, because DIM regulates UV and IR simultaneously, we have to be sure that we are not mixing both things using this D dependence. But then, because these things are always zero, we want to say, oh, if one uses a different scheme to regularize, we would like to, for this IBP to still hold true, maybe not zero, but maybe being some
dimension dependence. And then because it's clear that boundary term diverges at certain dimension, right? Not at any dimension.
But what we will look is just at relations between logarithmic divergence intervals. Mm-hmm. Because then this boundary term, it's always going to be some finite piece. So remember, when in the study of anomalies, if you have something which is linearly divergent, then you have some boundary term. If you have logarithmically divergent intervals, the boundary term here will be again some linearly divergent piece, and this will just give you some rational term, which is UV-finite. So basically, these IUPs, even though it looks like they're just 0 equals 0, they are a relation, an independent relation between the IR and the UV divergences of these integrals, which can be checked explicitly. One can always take these things, regulate a different way, use this IBP, and one sees that these divergences cancel. So one can always go back and cross-check that this is true. But basically, the other requirement is that we only look at log divergent relations, because then the boundary term is finite. Okay, if one was doing QCD or something, there might be issues with subdivergences, but here, because the theory is always finite to the previous loop order, that is not an issue.
So you can use it only like kind of in the critical case. So if you have vacuum diagrams which are power divergent, it doesn't really work.
Well, but if you have vacuum diagrams that are power divergent, DIMREG, you don't see this anyway. So basically, this is designed for the sort of calculations that people do when they look at the divergences. You can look at this divergence in a different dimension, where this power divergence would become some logarithmic.
But if you have a vacuum diagrams which are power divergent, that means that you cannot just use the large L limit, because there would be the sub-leading pieces which are logarithmic divergent, right?
Yeah, but you always have to expand, right? You expand your integrand, this is sum of vacuums, and then you look at the logarithmic divergent piece, because this is the only thing that won't be zero in the way.
You are looking only at the ones that don't depend on the external momenta. So the leading one is logarithmic divergent. That's what you have, right? If the leading one was power divergent, then you have sub-leading one, which depends. the external momenta, which would be logarithmic, and we have to also consider those.
So that is always the case in these superiority calculations. So these cancellations are even stronger because people are not looking at the leading divergence. For instance, this thing, n equals some superiority of 2 loops, it's quadratic divergent. But when one does the calculation in DIMRAC, what you're looking is not at the leading divergence, which would be quadratic, but the logarithmic divergence below this, which is even harder, that it cancels. And then you're looking at this thing cancels. And they all, because, I mean, this is a technical problem, but one can look at the logarithmic divergence in four dimensions that might be related in some way to the to this power-like divergence in five dimensions, and if you see it cancels, you give some evidence that the other one also cancels. But we don't have a good scheme to look directly at these power-like divergences. The only thing you can do is march over the dimensions and just check that all the logarithmic divergences in all the dimensions after the critical one cancel. Okay. So anyway, this can be done using these IBPs. One can see how these cancellations happen. I had some little example I want to show, but because I'm running out of time, I will just tell you that we looked at this sort of cancellation, and so it happens both in four and five dimensions using only Lorentz invariants in this sort of IBPs. And that gave us a hint that this might be everything that one needs. So in general, what we conjecture that is the all loop structure, and because now we gave up our hope on the integrand and we need to know something about integration, this is some statement about the sort of integral relations one needs to talk about these divergences. So the conjecture is that in order to show that these divergences happen, there's only two types of IBPs, very particular types of IBPs that are needed. So one of them is what people call Lorentz invariants. And this is an IBP of this type. I just have some basis of vectors in whatever dimension I have. This is like choosing some coefficients for the generators of of the Lorentz group for the loop momentum. And these are of this type. One can easily check that these are always of this type. And they just follow from Lorentz invariants. And the other type is some relabeling symmetry of the loop momentum. Which it's always of this form. I have some So we went back to the calculations that people did at higher loops, up to four loops. We just looked at all the tables of IBPs that they had to use. They had to do a lot of work to generate all of these things using their different tricks. But they all fall under either this category, some linear combination of these things.
But the Lorentz invariants you maintain explicitly, right, when you do calculation, if you do not consider Lorentz breaking, right?
Yeah.
So the first condition in this sense, it's kind of fulfilled if you do this, no?
Yeah, but remember, this is not a statement about I act with on the amplitude with something and I want that to vanish. That would be a true symmetry of the amplitude. This is something a bit different. This is telling there's these two symmetry-like things that generate a set of identities between some vacuum diagrams, which are large loop momentum, are everything you need to show the cancellation. For instance, we don't know what happens at some leading order with the integrand if we, but basically what one can say is that the leading order in this expansion, it's zero because of this. Now, for this to be a symmetry of the amplitude, then one would have to look at subleading and sub-subleading, and we don't know what happens there in general. But at least the large loop momentum behavior is zero just because of these two things. Because you have the freedom of rotating the loop momentum into the and this is some generator
But very, it is dependent on amount of supersymmetry, because both conditions are not explicitly involved supersymmetry, right?
Yeah, yeah. So that's the same. The same is that these cancellations, and also when they do the one-loop analysis, they are pretty generic.
Yeah.
So there is some extra cancellation that happens because of supersymmetry, but they happen for all value theories in general, in particular at one loop. And what we conjecture is that this is everything you need to show that there is some improved DV behavior. And we went back to the old calculations. We checked all the IBPs that were used to display the cancellations, and they were all of this type.
Is this conjecture just for the divergent parts, or is it also supposed to hold for?
No, this is just for the divergent parts.
But think all the logarithmic one, right? Even.
Yeah. Because otherwise, these IBPs might have some boundary term, as you said, and in general, you cannot use them to say anything about vacuum diagrams, because you might be mixing again UV and IR, or you're throwing away some UVPs in the boundary term, etc., etc. So the statement is the leading logarithmic divergence at large loop momentum is zero because of this. And after four loops, that was shown to be the case. And I believe in the five-loop calculations, they're also using basically this type of identities. And so far, for all the checks that have been done, these have been enough too. We don't know, I mean, this is not a statement about the symmetry of the amplitude, again. It's just some symmetry-like thing. But it's enough to show.
So is it actually a statement about the amplitude or not? Because you can also say the random combination of integrals which happen to be finite, you should be able to show it using these relations. So it's not specific to the amplitude, right? It doesn't have to be, they don't have to be the integrals which have show up in the amplitude.
No, okay, so if you want, you can phrase it in a different way. The particular integrals that have been the amplitude are finite because of this.
Okay, but is it true? Well, that's already a very strong statement, but it's stronger even true that any combination of integrals which happen to be finite, you can show using these identities, not necessarily the ones which show up in the amplitude.
I don't know. I haven't thought about this.
Because this doesn't really know about that. There is no information about amplitude. It's a statement about integrals, right?
Yeah. But it's not clear that any finite combination might be zero because of one of these things. You might need
so
other.
Maybe you could you explain what goes wrong with something else divergent, like two loop pure gravity? Like what goes.
So, in principle, these sort of things, or any other sort of IBPs which satisfy these requirements, wouldn't be enough to show that these things are divergent. Basically, what we find is in the end, there is some combination of vacuum diagrams, and you look at this table, and you see, ha, here it is, zero.
Yeah, but that's what works for all the cases where you know it's finite. So what is it that goes wrong when it's not finite?
So when it's not finite, what you would find is that this gives you some relations that allow you to go to a basis of masters, and when you go to these bases of masters, there is still some integrals which are divergent, so you find the divergence. So they can also be used to find divergences where they exist. But the same is
But you are using this on top of the other identities, like in this one loop and equals four case. There is no vacuum diagram. There is only one. Right?
Yeah.
So this is not necessary.
Well,
so you have to use.
If you wish, there it was zero because of Lorentz invariance, and Lorentz invariance you can phrase in this way.
No, but at one loop, there is only one vacuum diagram. Right? So everything is just one propagator. So
yeah.
There is no relation. So this
gives you relations between things with different with also numerators. So in general, this can act on anything with a numerator.
So it can be inside one.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when I talk about a vacuum, I mean a vacuum with also. In the end, you reduce to these things, but one talks about a vacuum with some numerator, so that this is logarithmic divergence. For instance, this thing, if I put 1, 1, 1, this is not logarithmic divergence.
So this is supposed to work even if there is external momentum insertion or not. Or this is just this type of integral?
So this is supposed to be, these IDPs work for anything. This is just a statement that I can rotate.
It should be vacuum diagram, right?
No. So this, the for vacuum diagrams, these work even if these are a relation between the divergences. So we can use them to display the cancellation. But these are true in general. So this is a, this, if you put anything here, this is an IBP that will give you a relation between integrals in general. And if you put anything here, this is also an IBP that would give you a relation between integrals in general. Because this is just a statement that if I have a loop integral, I can just do some transformation of the loop momenta, and then, because it's an SLL, the Jacobian is 1, so the integral should be unchanged. And when I expand, I can just say that this thing has to be 0.
Are you saying that these two classes of IBPs generate all IBPs that have the property that they preserve UV divergences for logarithmic integrals, logarithmic divergent integrals?
No. I'm claiming that these are the requirements for that to happen.
So, in particular, so what you're saying is just in the classes of examples you've looked at, these specific classes of IBPs happen to remove the UV divergence.
But it also it can be copied only in the vacuum limit, right? Because even at one loop, you take S bubble and P bubble, unless you go to vacuum limit, they have the same UV divergence. How do you show it? They have the same UV divergence if you keep the propagator structure, a different propagator structure. Right?
Yeah, but
go to vacuum limits.
Yeah.
I guess you can always do that if you're just looking at the UV.
Yeah.
But in general, this gives. I'm not saying that you will be able to show that these things cancel, not in the vacuum limit. But this still will give you some relation between the integrals, not in the vacuum limit.
It's not saying that this is a complete set of IBPs.
Right.
It's just a set of IBPs that are dimension independent, first of all, and which are sufficient for this particular problem.
Yeah. That's the coolest thing. If the divergences, if the cancellations are there, this is everything you need to show them. And it's not a symmetry of the amplitude, it's not a symmetry of the integral for now. This is a symmetry of integrals in general. This is a symmetry of integrals in general. But everything you're saying is these very generic things, just Lorentzian variants and the ability to change variables in the loop momentum, are enough to show the cancellation. So there is no supersymmetry, there is no super complicated symmetry argument. It's just some very generic thing that is responsible for the cancellation.
Do you know that there are other IBPs that could contribute, like in the sense that they would preserve the UV divergence, but just happen not to be relevant for your problem? You know, or is it possible that this really is a complete set of IBPs that preserve the UV divergences of logarithmic divergent vacuums?
I haven't thought about it. Also because, in the end, when we are writing vacuums, we are just writing 0 equals 0 all the time. So we were just looking for what are we allowed to do to show the divergences, and then we found that these things have the requirements for being a relation between the UV divergences, and they were enough for a particular problem. Actually, I don't know how would one go about to prove that this is a complete set in general for UV divergences.
Isn't it a little bit misleading saying that it's responsible for the cancellation? Because you first need to go to the vacuum with explicit coefficients, and then after using the linear identity, if the any of the coefficients are off, then after using the linear identity, that comes from the IBP, it doesn't cancel. So,
the same thing is when the divergences are there, if they are there,
yes,
these relations
are
enough to show it. And if it's, this is what Enrico was asking, if there is no cancellation,
exactly,
then these things, then we would claim that these things allow you to go to some places.
But this, along the same lines, right? If I compare pure gravity at two loop with supergravity, pure supergravity at one loop, then if you just go through this analysis for the supergravity case, I assume that you just won't have anything left over. You just have that it's finite. Whereas in pure gravity, you'll have something that's not finite. So you don't see exactly where you use the supersymmetry. So on the other hand, you could do a calculation where you take gravity plus n number of gravitinos and other sets of matter, and then you try to parameterize that theory in this way, and you would have some leftover. And then you should see exactly when you pick the spectrum that to be one of the supergravity theories, you should get 0. So have you thought about doing something like that? Then you can definitely more directly see where supersymmetry comes in, right, at the end result.
Yeah, the problem is that it's for this higher calculation, it's very hard to control the spectrum. Like at one loop, one can very easily say, okay, I have a scalar running inside, I have a fermion running inside,
Yes.
But if you look at these hieroglyph samples, in general, it's very similar.
But that's why it's hard to really distinguish where you, whether you use supersymmetry or not, right? This is just a way, it's a way of elucidating where divergences of, I mean, just by analyzing the integrals, but it looks like it's hard to say whether the cancellation should happen because of supersymmetry or because of IBPs.
I agree that, so this will give you a relation between integrals with some particular coefficients, and in the amplitude, those coefficients will depend on your matter content.
Sure.
And of course, then you see if
so the question is this that something that gives us insight into why cancellations happen? Or is it a technical way of picking out the divergent pieces?
So for now, it's a technical way of picking
out.
It's the only sort of structure that we have seen that carries over, even though it's a technical trick in the end.
But essentially, what you get is asking that, writing this as a derivative of this way depends on the amount of supersymmetry you have, right? Because, because you are not writing derivative of what, right? And this happen, say, for example, different way for extended supersymmetry, right?
What do you mean?
Integrant, the part which you are differentiating, does depend on the content of the sieve, right?
Yes.
And in this way, you have different relation depending on what kind of, amount of supersymmetry you have.
Yeah.
A different relation for what you're differentiating,
Yes. But it's the same thing.
It's just the
coefficients. In the end, we'll tell you if this is enough or not. But also, there is some arguments by Nima and Jared Kaplan that the improved large Z behavior is something really generic and it has to do with some extra spin symmetries at large loop moment or at large momenta of gravity. So in some sense, this would go in that direction, saying there is something generic that happens. At the large loop momentum, which is that this thing is sufficient to show the cancellation. Of course, for that to be true, the coefficients have to be the right coefficients. But
do you get a different number of basis integrals than we got when we used basically all the IBPs?
No. The only thing is that these are enough. So when in general you...
So you end up with the same basis.
Okay. In fact, the check wasn't doing the calculation again. The check was going to the tables that you generated and seeing that all of these IBPs fall into these classes.
I mean, do you know that, I mean, you said that these are perhaps all you have, but I mean, do you have a way of producing a normal form where if you're still left with some UV stuff, then you can't get rid of it? Has some UV divergence?
You're asking if I use these things and I have some divergence?
I mean, is there a normal form? Is there an algorithm which then reduces you to some irreducible bit which you know you will not be able to get rid of?
Well, the algorithm is
the same question as a basis. I don't know. It could be the same question as but maybe it's a slightly weaker way of saying it.
So if you want a different way of thinking about this, is this gives you a relation between integrals that allows you to go to a basis, and when you use this, you find that all the coefficients in the end are zero.
You should probably check that your basis doesn't have some secret relations, that
well, right.
Other one you integrate it isn't three times the other one.
But you're just looking for both these relations. So the only relation that you are basically missing from the general case is when you have L mu D L mu with different loop momenta, right? Otherwise, you have everything.
Okay. You mean this?
The same loop momenta, you have general tensor structure.
Yeah.
And with a different loop momenta, they must be your L mu and D. So you are missing this other, L A mu D D L mu.
Well, I haven't thought about what happens when you combine these things.
Because they already seem span kind of a large...
Yeah, so the way I think about this is, in general, this is Lorentz invariance, and this is this relabeling, but they just tell you that you are... Well, generally, you're just able to reparametrize the integral in any way.
But isn't it possible that you are spanning all the L, D, D, L, actually, relations, all of them, if you combine these two sets?
Well, there are definitely relations that have d's in the coefficients, and just don't. So it's hard to imagine you could take combinations.
Not all IBPs, of course.
But you have also the fact, I think that when it's contracted, it's symmetric quite a bit in the first one, so it's not spanned, that would be the
Okay. So what we were trying to see, if this just gives you some SL D times L, which is just the ability to take my loop momentum and just rewrite it in any variables I want. But we weren't able to see if these things expand the whole set of these relations. Because in general, I mean, you have to choose some particular parameterization for the momentum.
More questions? Well, we thought you're coming up. If not, if there are no more questions, let's thank Julio again.